David Davidovic is going to join me for a McCafe coffee catch-up. Head to a McCafe drive-thru and grab your favourite barista-made coffee today. But I take your calls, 1-300-736-736, whilst we wait for Gillon McLachlan to address us, the boss of the AFL. Costa in Hughesdale is on the line. Welcome to you, Costa.
Thanks, Dwayne. Look, with the draft, what they should do is the first round should only be for the 18-year-olds, so 18 yep. picks. The second round, 19, and the third round, 20-plus-year-olds. But with the bottom three teams, the third last team should get the first pick of the 18-year-olds. The second last is 19-year-olds, first pick. And the side that finishes last gets the matured footballer, 20-year-olds.
So yeah, we have had a plan in place where the bottom teams have had first access to some of the mature players as a compensation to get themselves a little bit of a fast track to some experience. We've got a lot of father sons and academy players in this draft coming as well. Now the next two drafts. So for those teams that have got a father son they want to grab, and for those people that have got an academy player they want to grab, they've been putting some time into these players for a little while now, and they essentially want them immediately. It seems, especially for a father son and an academy player that knows they were going to be on the list for that team in 2021 because they knew that the team they were going to play for is the team that their father played for or they've been training with. Now, all of a sudden, if they get ripped out of that and don't have that at the end of it, it's going to be a little weird for them because they've been essentially planning for 2 or 3 or 4 years to go to that specific club. So you could have a situation where you just give the academy players and the father sons an opportunity to go to their club, but that'll never happen unless we one day get a situation where the father-son rule gets reduced to one game and we get under-19 teams attached to clubs. So we have zones again, and that could change it completely, the draft, if we ever had zones again. Craig Kelly was on the program yesterday talking about this national under-18 competition. So there has been a thought of zones. So if you play under-19s for Collingwood, under-17s, under-19s, then Collingwood gets first chance at you if you're in their zone. But it doesn't look like we're heading back in that direction, Costa. 1-300-736-736 is the number if you'd like to join me and David Davidovic, who joins me. Welcome to you, David. Great to have you back on the program.
Good to be with you, Dwayne.
Let's talk a little bit of sport overall. It looks as if every sport in the world now, whether it be in 3 months' time, 4 months' time, or 6 months' time, is looking at almost the 100% option of returning before crowds get a chance to return. You've kept your eye on the world stage. Is that the way you're seeing it?
Yeah, spot on. I mean, at the moment, there's, I believe, three leagues taking place or continuing as we speak. Belarus, who we discussed a couple of weeks ago, Tajikistan, and Nicaragua, believe it or not. So a bit of talk at the moment that the South Korean League as well as the German Bundesliga could be kicking off next month. It's yet to be confirmed, but they each of those federations and leagues will be having discussions over coming days. But they certainly look set to be two of the, let's say, top leagues around the world to kick off. And in terms of the rest, I mean, it's a real wait-and-see scenario as has been widely reported. I mean, every country and even, you know, states and cities within countries are all at very different stages with regards to fighting this coronavirus pandemic. But I'll tell you what, the fans out there, whether it's Belarus, South Korea, Germany, whatever it is, I reckon once the live football comes back, they'll be all over it.
And even in Spain, where, you know, they've been really hard hit, some teams, or at least one team, was intended to go back to training, but they were told, no, you won't be doing that. Even if you have aspirations of being a safe environment, we're not going to let you. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's very much a horses for courses scenario. I spoke to a couple of the Socceroos boys based in South Korea the other day, Jason Davidson and Adam Taggart, and even them with each of their clubs have got you know, very different scenarios, and they're very in Ulsan Hyundai's case, Jason Davidson's club, you know, very specific and strategic with regards to, you know, players coming in and you know, where they enter and you know, I guess keeping in mind that social distancing as much as they can. Although, interestingly, over there, what they were saying was that, life has sort of continued on as normal in terms of restaurants and cafes and whatnot being open. But, certainly everyone wearing face masks, and they've got, some pretty extraordinary technology that they're incorporating over there with regards to, infrared and testing temperatures and all that sort of stuff. But, it's very much a case-by-case scenario. A lot of clubs are still not training around the world.
And the Olympic situation is interesting because there's going to be no Olympic pre-events for at least another few months, if not 6 months. So we might only have a three-month lead-in to the Olympics where there's actual meets where the competitors get together, whether it be track and field or whether it be swimming or whether it be, weightlifting events. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of testing parameters are in place now in these conditions around the world with so many different conditions in different countries as to how you make sure that all your athletes stay clean now and don't just decide to take the cheat option and then get themselves clean with the three-month lead-up events as the only place that they're going to get tested in the next little while.
Surely not insinuating that there's any cheating that takes place at the Olympics, eh, Dwayne?
No, of course not. I'm just worried for the clean athletes that are going to take this as a clean athlete and get cheated on the day, which gets happens so often with someone who all of a sudden turns up to the pre-event and they're twice the size that they were 6 months ago.
Yeah, some of those dodgy doctors have got their work cut out, haven't they, trying to get all their the measurements right. But look, it's an interesting, that'll be a really interesting one, won't it, the whole Olympic scenario when all the sports are so different. There's going to be so many, wonderful stories with athletes, all of a sudden being in the mix for 2021 where they wouldn't have been for Tokyo 2020. But there's also going to be some hard luck stories. And just to bring it back to football, some great news over the last week or so with regards to the Oly Roos, the Australian Olympic men's team. It is, of course, an under-23 competition at Olympic level. And a lot of the top age players feared that they would lose their chance at representing Australia at their one and only Olympic Games, their one and only opportunity. But it was confirmed that age level will remain. So in effect, it'll be an under-24s competition next year. For the Matildas, of course, it is an open age tournament. So they will go there with their full squad with Sam Kerr, Steph Catley, Lydia Williams and all the stars. And they will hopefully go there as one of the favourites. But the good news is obviously both Australian teams have qualified, which for the men hasn't been the case since 2008.
And around the world, sport fans are trying to be appeased by doing various things. What have the various loads of sport fans in different countries been doing to get their feed? And what have you been doing to get your feed of sport when there's no live sport to go to?
Well, around the world, it's, everyone's going retro, aren't they? Seeing watching a lot of the old clips, from their teams, from their countries, old World Cups, old Cup competitions, league wins, funny moments, etc. There has been a little bit of live sport, I guess, not too much. We just saw the esports, the
V8s,
the Formula Ones, the V8s. That's right, yeah. With Max Verstappen involved, which was great to see, and I've quite enjoyed watching the Formula One series on Netflix over the last couple of weeks. So that's what I've been doing personally, Dwayne. Got a couple of kids now, so that tends to keep you pretty busy. But, love jumping on YouTube and even seeing, on Channel 7, some of the old retro footy games that are going on. But, look, I'm not sure how long we'll be able to last with that. I'm sure we'll need live sport back sooner rather than later. But quite enjoying the nostalgia and the trips down memory lane.
So we're talking about how AFL might change, given that we're looking back and how AFL was, and maybe we're going to change our sport. Can you see that happening in some of the other sports around the world? Soccer, are they going to, look at what they can do to change their sport? Or is soccer one of those that they don't really change that quickly? They have changed a few rules, like the offside rule and the back pass of the keeper rule and and things like that. But do you see other sports changing because this is a time where they could implement change?
Yeah, I think, you know, so those international sports such as football, basketball, etc. I mean, it's almost impossible to make seismic changes because of, you know, the international elements to it. But the those sports that are, you know, very much confined to, you know, one country or several countries, then they're more of a chance. AFL obviously sits in that bracket. I guess, you know, even for the few games that we did see at the moment, obviously the shorter quarters and whatnot over here. So, yeah, look, in football, I don't think it'll change too much. They will obviously try and cram a lot more games into a certain period. The big changes will come with regards to, you know, the timings of the, you know, the transfer windows and the player movement, which generally have been set in stone for the last, I mean, there's been a bit of movement, but in its existing form probably for the last decade or so.
Will the money in the game change? We're talking about our money here in our game. Will the money side of it, because some enormous amounts of money are paid for, and I noticed there were, did I read a Harry Kane story on the weekend as well? Will the money side of things drop a little, or will there still be these outrageous transfer fees and outrageous numbers paid for great stars?
Look, there'll still be outrageous fees paid, but no doubt it will level out a little bit. It'll drop back certainly over the next few years. I mean, even the top clubs are bleeding, but you really feel for those middle-tier clubs and the lower-tier clubs. They're the ones that are really going to struggle. And what you just hope doesn't happen is that they're not, you know, really, I guess, pillaged during this period by the bigger clubs, because, you know, there's going to be clubs that are struggling and, you know, there might be fire sales going on. So I think it'll be really important for authorities to, you know, protect some of these clubs who are struggling. And FIFA has indicated that they will be looking to assist a number of national federations around the world. But, yeah, I mean Harry Kane has been linked with a $400 million move to Manchester United. Now, I don't think that'll be happening. But then again, Man United are an absolute global behemoth. So, if anyone can, you know, still pay those sorts of wages, it'll be clubs at that level: Liverpool, Man United, Real Madrid, Barcelona, obviously. But yeah, I think there'll be in the short term a lot less movement. You know, one of the stars who was on track to move this upcoming summer, or two of them, Kylian Mbappe and Neymar, both at PSG. You know, we're talking about transfer fees in the region of 150 to 200 million euros. So you can basically double that in terms of Australian dollars. Look, players at that level will still go for a high price, but yeah, I don't think we'll reach those levels in the coming years.
And you've seen James Hurt's son play soccer. He was thinking of a soccer career, is that correct?
Yeah, correct. Interesting hearing James talk on the Essendon podcast today. Admitting that he was shocked by his son Tom's decision to join the Bombers. But, yeah, talented player. I mean, he's been at Port Melbourne Soccer Club, who are in the top tier of the NPL, the equivalent of the VFL here in Victoria. And he was a fringe player with the first team. I saw him play in the under-20s and certainly got a few games with the first team and spent a bit of time overseas training and trialing with clubs, primarily over in Holland, and spent a bit of time with Ajax. And the only reason I believe he didn't stay longer was there were some issues with regards to visas and whatnot. So, yeah, interesting that he made the switch. It's all signs pointed to him pursuing a future with the round ball. And looks like he even had his parents called for the recent period, but good luck to him. Obviously, those skills are absolutely transferable. Seen a lot of players, you know, transfer, probably not that late, but certainly transfer in their teams from soccer to football, namely Adam Goods, Farron Ray, and these kinds of players. Some pretty handy players there. So certainly with the focus on the foot skills in soccer, those skills are absolutely transferable. And, you know, who knows how he'll go. I mean, it'll take him a bit of time, obviously, has to bulk up a bit, young Tommy Hurd, but a fantastic story for the Essendon faithful.
Now, Gil McLaughlin's press conference has been delayed till after 2 o'clock, so we'll bring you that very shortly. But one last one from me, David. And we are running out of time, but can you see private ownership ever in the AFL? Footy or soccer around the world's always had it. AFL, you ever?
I can. Yeah, maybe not all the clubs, but certainly for, you know, a handful of clubs, potentially some of the strugglers, the battlers. I think, yeah, it's unique times at the moment. And I guess going back to your question from a little bit earlier, this is the time where all sports are looking at, you know, scenarios very differently. And it appears, I think Nick Riewoldt put it on the agenda a couple of weeks ago, and there's no doubt that these discussions, you know, being had behind the scenes. And, you know, if there's people out there with money and a passion for, you know, the game and for particular clubs, I mean, I think they'd be silly, you know, not to look at it. There's clubs that are struggling now. Clubs have always struggled in the past. And, I mean, this unforeseen pandemic just, I guess, underlines how vulnerable some clubs can be. So I think it's inevitable, actually.
Great to hear you say that, Dave, in some respects. We'll talk more about that when we get you on next week. I know you're going to be a regular on the program, so it's a pleasure for me to have you on the line for a McCafe coffee catch-up once a week. We're drive-through people, McCafe. We're coffee people. Head to a McCafe drive-through and grab your favourite barista-made coffee today. We'll speak again next week, David.
Good on you, Dwayne. Look forward to it, mate.
Dave Davidovic joining me for that catch-up. Gil McLaughlin's press conference, probably about 2:15 now, so you can jump on the line. We've got an opportunity to take your calls for about 15 or so minutes. 1-300-736-736 is the number if you'd like to join me on the Werribee Kia open line. 1-300-736-736.